when I joined, you know, women suffered quite a harsh time of it, and men actually as well, but women predominantly, things like having your bottom slapped or people making comments about the way you look or gestures, that was everyday norm. And thankfully now that has massively improved, and I would never want a young service woman to go through some of the things I went through. As long as you are respectful of rank and respectful of the individual you're speaking to, I think as long as you're honest, polite, and can bring your point across, anybody will listen to you. By working together, we are so much stronger than working apart. There shouldn't be tension or jealousy or envy between women. We need to push each other, help each other, and bring our best versions of ourselves every day.
I can't believe we are almost at the end of the first series of The Culture Kernel. Some of you may know I was reluctant to become a podcast host, but now I have almost got over my imposter syndrome and can honestly say it's been a real joy to have these wonderfully candid conversations over the last few months. Thank you to everyone who sent feedback. We read all of your messages and comments, and it really feels like the podcast is building its own community. One of the fair criticisms has been that we haven't featured enough non-officer voices. So I'm delighted to introduce this week's guest, Royal Air Force Warrant Officer Sim Rezazadeh Wilson. Sim is a force of nature, a radiator of energy and positivity, as well as being a brilliant connector. She has numerous roles, including the Deputy Gender Advocate of the RAF's Gender Network, and a real talent for speaking truth to power in an encouraging way. I'm Lindsay McDuff, the Culture Kernel, and this is my conversation with Sim.
I'm a very passionate person. I am dedicated to, obviously, the military side of things, making life better. For me, I want to make sure that service women have the best experience in their career. And that fuels my fire, because I just think that's where I want to, you know, I want to take it. Having no role models for myself when I was younger, that was hard. So now I want to be able to send out a positive energy to all women, and to be honest, all men, all genders, and just say, look, let's do this together. Let's break the glass ceiling. Definitely for women, because that's a real big thing for me. My passion comes, I think, from when I was a child. You know, I had very strong parents who really sort of pushed me to always be my best self. I definitely believe that you need a purpose in life. You know, if you don't have a purpose, then why'd you get out of bed every day? It's that the fuel in the fire, I think, for me, that I need to get up every day and bring my best version of myself to work every day, set a good standard for people at work, for my daughter at home. I want her to look back and think, oh, my mum was a really strong woman and she tried her hardest. Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think maybe it's just too much caffeine. I want people to be happy. There is so much negativity in the world. Mobile phones, you scroll through, and social media, and everything's negative. The news is negative. So I think if you can just be a little positive light to some person and just make them think, actually, it's not all bad, that will make such a difference to people.
And do you have a list of achievements that you're aiming to secure?
It's funny, actually. So me and my husband joke about it. Obviously, he's done 32 years. I've done 22 years. And he's, you know, got a lot more medals than me. And he's a lot more highly accomplished than I am. And he actually, I think, is the reason that I work so hard almost, because he jokes about, regardless of op tours, his other medals, you know, I've got this, you haven't. So he almost pushes me in a way. Not that he'd ever admit it. Yeah, he is one of the people that I think definitely is like, he knows my capacity. So he sort of pushes me to do more. Mm. And he knows I get bored. So I'm like, right, give me the next thing, the next thing. Every day you get up and you have to be a better person than you were the day before.
Having spent some time with you, you're full of wisdom and enormous energy. Can we start with the energy first of all?
Yeah, definitely.
Where does that come from?
I'm just one of those people that my cup's half full. I don't want to be miserable. I've been brought up in the military. I've been in the military for so long now that, you know, you hear so many people saying, oh, this, oh, that. And life's too short. Let's be happy. That's positivity brings positivity. So, yeah, my cup's always half full.
And has it always been like that?
No, more as I've got older, definitely. I think when I was younger, I was very much wired, but probably not for necessarily the right reasons. Whereas now I try and focus my energy on things that can make people's lives a bit better, even if it's one person, just to make their life a little bit better.
It's lucky that you do have all this energy, because You've got a whole number of different jobs. Can we talk a little bit about those? What's your day job?
So my day job is I am the Squadron Warrant Officer for the Defence Movements Training Squadron. So basically I'm responsible for phase two training of RAF logistics movements operators into service. They usually come straight from phase one training at RAF Halton. So they're still really keen, really excitable. They've just had their graduations and then they come to me for 15 weeks of training. It's a dual squadron, so we also have Army phase two trainees as well, which do their MOVCON classes.
Is that movement control?
Movements control, yeah. So they do their class three, two, and then class one. Plus we have additional training, so further training, so our trade training courses and promotion courses.
Is your background as a trainer?
So I have done training before. When I was a corporal, I was a trainer at the movement school, and I was really fortunate to train many sort of phase two courses and see people now who are still serving who are the rank of sergeant, which I'm really proud of.
Is that what your branch is? Is that the right language?
Yeah, no, so it's a profession now because the RAF have just changed to profession. So I'm actually in logistics. So I'm a logistics movement specialist. Really, our profession is focused on the aircraft. So leaving Bryce Norton, we manage all passengers, cargo, baggage, mail, out of Bryce Norton, anywhere in the world. It's a really interesting job. We do a lot of stuff, not just baggage handling, which people seem to think, but we handle all dangerous air cargo. We handle any freight that's travelling anywhere in the world in support of any operation or any exercise, and passengers as well. We also deal with the weight and balance of aircraft. So it's a little bit of maths involved, mm-hmm. which is never good for me, but we do try.
That presumably keeps you quite busy.
Really busy, yeah.
But you've also got other roles.
Yes. So I'm also the RAF's Deputy Gender Advocate to the RAF Gender Network. In 2019, I was on the RAF Gender Network as the female other ranks representative, and then subsequently have moved up to the Deputy Advocate role 2 years ago, which I thoroughly enjoy. I'm also RAF Bryce Norton Station D&I Lead, which is passionate. So I teach a lot of D&I training on station. I've then got Healing Military Minds, which is a great organisation. Yeah, I like to keep busy.
Oh, my word. I'm worn out just hearing all the things that you're doing. Can we talk a little bit about your role as a deputy gender advocate? The network is an employee support group,
yep.
which is doing great work to help other women, but presumably it's not just about the women.
Absolutely, yeah. So the Royal Navy and the Army have their single service women's network. The RAF in 2019 decided that they wanted to go for a whole full inclusive network. So that's why we have the RAF Gender Network. Within that network, we have a women's representative, male representative, and non-binary representatives. And we do a lot of linking in with the LGBT network as well. The purpose of the network is basically to advocate for all personnel within the Air Force. So if there's any issues or concerns that people have that are gender related, we can then take them forward. A lot of the work was done following the HCDC report.
The House Commons Defence Committee Women in the Armed Forces report, I think you had a key role in that as well.
Yes, so when the Sarah Atherton report was released in 2021, it was quite scary to read, really, and quite sad when you listen to the lived experience of some of our service women. So at the time, MOD set up the service women's representatives. So it was the chair and co-chair positions from the networks. So there was myself and Group Captain O'Grady, there was W1 Kelly Caswell-Treen and Colonel Hannah from the Army, and then W1 Kim Witch and Lieutenant Commander Fran from the Navy. So together we formed the Service Women's Representatives, and we attended monthly meetings at Main Building discussing issues with people from the likes of Secretary of State of Defence, MinDPV, Sarah Atherton came to a lot of meetings herself as well. So it was just to give that voice from the shop floor almost.
And did you see the impact of that?
Yeah, very much so. Because when you read it, I think there's a lot of people who had their heads in the clouds a little bit until that report came out because it was so raw. Mm. As a service, we looked at ways that we could do quick wins to improve the lived experience of service women. And it was little things which, you know, may not seem that important to some people, but things like changing our uniform policy, allowing women to wear trousers in their mess dress, changing the hosiery policy because the policy before stated that women could only wear certain colour tights. Whereas we changed it to say, well, actually, you can't buy them now. Let's make it more flexible for all women to be able to do. We changed the hair policy, which is a big one, obviously, for all service women. We are so regimented in bringing our hair back into a little tight bun. So we relaxed the policy and brought in the ponytails and plaits, which has helped so many women because you don't realise how many women suffer from tension headaches from having their hair too tight. So something as simple as letting a woman have a ponytail has improved her lived experience. So it's been really, really beneficial.
And you talked about quick wins.
Yeah.
There have been also, I think, some more substantial, longer-term changes.
Yeah, some really big wins from the report. Things like the wraparound childcare, people who are serving who have children, the wraparound childcare service is in to fund breakfast clubs and after school clubs so people can get their children into these breakfast clubs and after school clubs, not worry about the funding and get on with their job, which is an absolutely brilliant incentive. It wasn't around when I had my daughter, but I mean, now that it just takes that bit of pressure off. And then you've also got flexible service and flexible working. So it gives service people, whether it's a woman or a man, the opportunity to apply for flexible service for 3 years and not deploy. So they can then be at home with their children at critical times.
And is that ability to flex between flexible service and not, is that easy to do?
Yeah, it is very easy. So flexible service, you can apply for it through the JPA system and you can decide whether you're on restricted service, whether you just want to not deploy. Flexible working looks at things like compressed working hours or if people want to work 4 days a week, which is really good. So it gives people more freedom in the workplace while still being proud to serve in the military.
You talked about some of the tough personal testimony that people wrote in, service women primarily wrote in about their experiences to the House of Commons Defence Committee Women in the Armed Forces report. You joined about 22 years ago, I think.
Yes, that's right.
Can we rewind the clock and talk a bit about what life was like for you then?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I joined in 2002, so I've just done my 22-year point. I joined a trade at the time that was very male-dominated. There wasn't any female NCOs, so no non-commissioned officers in the workplace, so it was quite daunting. My first day on shift after finished training, you know, I got told, right, you're a woman, get yourself in the kitchen, you're on tea duty the whole shift. It sounds really stupid now when you think back, but like in the crew room, there was Page Three Girl pictures everywhere. There was FHM magazines and very few women. So for us, we felt really awkward, but you just got on with it at the time. You wouldn't have discussed it because I think you would have been a problem child, or, you know, someone would have said, oh, we just get on with it. It was really, really tough. Same with unacceptable behaviours as well. So when I joined, you know, women suffered quite a harsh time of it, and men actually as well, but women predominantly, things like having your bottom slapped or people making comments about the way you look or gestures. That was everyday norm. And thankfully now that has massively improved. And I would never want a young service woman to go through some of the things I went through and the comments I had. It was pretty harsh when you look back, really. At the time, you just get on with it though, unfortunately.
What you're talking about is normalising the unacceptable behaviours, which clearly were out of kilter with the values of the organisation. What do you think has helped change that?
Definitely, I think having more male allies, I think it's really important for people of all genders, really, to understand what it's like to be in the minority, not just in my trade, that women, obviously, in the services is a minority anyway, as we know. So I think it's really important to have those male allies who stand up and speak out for us and almost have our back, if that makes sense. That does make a difference, yeah.
You talked about the importance of male allies, and I remember recently going to the Defence Women's Network Conference, and I was lucky to host a panel about courageous conversations, and I felt something of a fraud on that because there were plenty of times where I had failed to have those courageous conversations. Have you always felt able to have courageous conversations?
No, definitely not. I think, especially as a junior rank, you don't. And at the time, it wasn't seem as acceptable almost. I suppose we all have that little bit of imposter syndrome in us as well, where we're too scared to speak up because, you know, oh, it's just me, just get on with it sort of thing. Now, it's really important for me that I have an open door policy at my work. You know, if anybody, regardless of gender or age or rank, if they want to come and speak to me about something, you've got to be there to listen to them because everybody's voice matters. And that's really important.
Do you think the conditions and the environment has changed in order that younger members of the organisation feel more capable and confident to speak up?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I think these days, I think women are definitely, their voices have definitely been heard. And I think now with the unacceptable behaviours, it's not tolerated, absolutely not tolerated. And I think it's just having that courage to speak up if something isn't right and actually saying this isn't acceptable. And I think women are now getting there. And I think now, like I say, having the male allies, people are witnessing other things now and standing up for people, the third party effect, the bystander effect, you know, people are really making a difference. And I think things are massively improving for service women. There's still a long way to go. There's a long way to go for everything, you know, lots of changes, but we're definitely on the right track.
If we get a crystal ball out and look into the future, say in 3-4 years time, what would you say good looks like?
I think we need to increase our female numbers in the services, definitely. I think across all three services, we're doing well. Unfortunately, we need to almost not look at statistics, but I think we need more women in. We need more women in SLT roles, I think, for role models. I think really, really important for myself. I never had that female role model in my trade when I joined up. And I think if I had, it would have made a difference for me, definitely. So I think we definitely need to put those people, but then not promote people also on their gender, which is a really important matter because I've had people say to me, well, you've only been promoted because you're a girl. And that's frustrating. But I think definitely just having that open conversation now of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And I think that's definitely the pathway forward.
One of our guests talked about the importance of looking at things through an intersectional lens. You have got Persian ancestry.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit of that and also what impact that has had on your service?
I say I'm half Persian. If I say I'm half Iranian, people think I'm a spy. I'm genuinely not. So I like to say I'm half Persian. It sounds a bit more exotic as well. My dad was born in Iran and he came to England in the 70s because he actually was in the Imperial Air Force, the Shah's Air Force at the time. He came here to work with the British. Long story short, he went to Brighton on a language course to learn English, met my mum. Things changed as they do. And subsequently, they've still been married now 50 years later. So it was really, really tough growing up in a household as a child with a Middle Eastern father. He was quite strict, as you can imagine, but he only ever wanted the best for us. And he's the most patriotic British person now. He is so proud of the fact that I'm serving. My brother did serve. Yeah, I've had quite a few negative comments. And that's almost why I kept my name. So when I got married, I didn't want to be just Corporal Wilson, because it was important to me to keep my identity. So having a surname like mine, which is Rezazadeh, which is also the longest name in the Air Force, and I think I win at Scrabble, which is quite funny, having two Zs. But it was just important to keep that identity. That's kind of as well where my focus was, learning about women in the Middle East and women's rights in the Middle East. And I'm really passionate about that. You know, when you see things happening, it's really sad out there how women are treated in Iran, Afghanistan. I think it's starting to change. You know, we look at Saudi, that's starting to move forward and become more westernised. It'd just be nice to see those other countries follow suit. But yeah, I've had people say to me, oh, you've only been promoted because you're an ethnic, which is quite sad, really. I'm a woman and an ethnic, so I must have ticked two boxes there, really.
Has that also shaped your decision to do another role that I think you've got as a UN Women Delegate?
Yeah, so the UN Committee for UN Women UK every year run the Committee for the Status of Women, which anyone can apply to join. And I've done it now for 2 years, and there's lots of other service women that do it, which is brilliant. And you get to join webinars from all across the UN community, from New York to London, and just listening to really inspirational women given some really great empowering briefs for you to listen to. I'm quite passionate about that, especially with what's going on with women in the world at the moment as well.
Now, you mentioned that you're married.
Yeah.
You're in this amazing group of people who are dual-serving couples. Can you talk a bit about that, how you've managed to do that and both pursue stellar careers? How's the RAF helped enable that to happen?
My husband, he's also serving. He's also a movements warrant officer, the same as me. He's currently the station warrant officer at Bryce Norton, so he's got quite a busy role. We've been together 20 years, so I met him within the very start of my career and been married for 16 years this year. And it has been tough. You know, when we had our daughter, we weren't married at the time. It wasn't kind of planned. So we were kind of forced into marriage almost to start with, because at the time they didn't really understand, you know, I was a single parent officially, so they could have deployed us both at the same time. When Ava, our daughter, was 9 months old, I was going to get deployed and so was he, because we weren't married. So we almost were forced into marriage, which has worked for us. We both deploy, both fully deployable, pretty much year on, year off. He was away last year, I deploy next year. Sorry, our daughter's early years. That was tough for her as well, having a mum and dad who, 1 year mum was away, 1 year dad was away. When you reflect back on it now, actually you do think, oh my God, how did we do that? But you do. My husband's very busy. You know, he's got a massive additional duty that he's on the RFU council. So he's passionate about rugby. Between us, we sort of high five each other into the house and out of the house.
And you talked about your daughter.
Yeah.
How has you and your husband being away regularly impacted her life, and what has that made her become?
So she's 17, just coming up 17. So she's at that lovely sort of sassy age, as I like to call it. Mm. It's been really tough. So I left her first time when she was two. And I remember, sounds so silly, but it's a vivid memory I have, that when I deployed, she was in nappies. So I gave her a hug goodbye. You know, she had a little nappy on, so she'd sort of tap her bottom. When I came home, she was out of a nappy. So when I picked her up, she didn't have a nappy on. It made a bit of a psychological impact in my life, because I was like, oh my God, I left a baby, but now she's a little girl. Mm. But to be fair to her, she's been brilliant. She plays on it quite a bit. She uses the, I'm an abandoned child. My mum and dad deploy all the time. To her benefit more than anything, because, you know, it's almost like blackmail and whatever she can get out of both of us. All military children, they're so resilient, because they have to be. Their parents go away, whether it is a mum or a dad, or, you know, or both in our case. It is tough, I think, for the kids. And I look at her now and she is so independent, which is brilliant and I'm so proud of. But then I have that mum guilt. And mum guilt's real. You know, you think, oh, I left you quite a few times. Did I put my career first? And that's the question you sort of battle with. And actually, no, she's always been my priority, but I still have that feeling of I may have put my career first. Deploying to Afghan when she was little and twice, and then the Falklands and Ali Deed and all over the place.
To generate stability, did you decide that you would stay where you were in a home so that she wasn't having to move even when you were moving?
Yeah, so we were really fortunate. So because of our profession, being RAF mover, logistics movers, predominantly our profession is based at Brize Norton. So of a trade of 1,000, 700-ish are at Brize. So we made the decision from the start when we first got together, we first had her, was to buy a house straight away, because we didn't want her moving around. We talked about boarding school. It wasn't my preference, but we always said if she asked, we would definitely do it. So she goes to a very good school now anyway. But we bought a house, we settled to make sure that no matter what, when either of us were deployed, she had the continuity of the same school, the same bed every night. So that didn't change for her, which was really, really important.
You mentioned earlier that you were involved in the Healing Military Minds Committee. I was really fortunate to go to an amazing event that was fundraising £150,000 in one night.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in that?
So Healing Military Minds is a fundraising machine which was set up by Corporal Hayley Court. Now, if anyone knows Hayley, she's a formidable woman. She scares me. As a corporal, bear in mind I'm a warrant officer, she's the one woman that can really scare me. She approached me last year and said, I really want you on the committee. Could you come and join the committee? My husband's done quite a bit for her as well as the station warrant officer. So I agreed, not realising when I agreed that I was actually going to be the 2IC of the committee. I thought I was just going to take a nice leisurely position. We have the annual military ball, the gala, which was a huge success, as you said. So Healing Military Minds has raised £150,000 for combat stress. We're not a charity, we're a fundraising machine. So all our money goes to combat stress. On the actual night itself, we raised 36,000. So it was brilliant. Throughout the year, we do various fundraising events. So there's the coming up, the Santa Splash in an ice lake, which I'm trying to hide from Hayley for that one. And then there's the Climb Snowdon in April, where people go and climb up Snowdon, raising money for Healing Military Minds. So again, all the money goes straight to combat stress.
And that's a great model that the purpose of the organisation is to do the fundraising, but then the money is given to the charity that's designed to deliver impactful change.
Absolutely. Yeah, it saves. We don't need to be paying members. We don't need to be paying CEOs. We literally fundraise. Every penny goes to combat stress, which is brilliant. And that was the Hayley's dream. And her motto is that she's always wanted to save one person at a time. And she's definitely doing that.
You've done amazing things already. And I've no doubt that there's more of that to come. We talked earlier about you being a non-officer, you're a warrant officer, and I wondered whether you have any reflections on whether that's curtailed your opportunities to have an impact and to achieve.
I definitely don't think so. I think for me, from the day I joined, I wanted the big badge. The big badge was where I wanted to go. And I've worked incredibly hard, like many, everybody has, but I've worked really hard because for me, I always wanted those firsts. For example, I was the first female mover at JADTU, which is a certain job. And then I wanted to be the first female flight sergeant who went to the Falklands in my profession. And so those little firsts that you have. When I got my warrant 2 years ago, for me, that was a massive deal because at the time there was only one other female warrant officer and she'd done 30 plus years. So for me, that was a massive achievement. People keep saying to me now, oh, when are you commissioning? When are you commissioning? You know, you're going to go down that the Army LE scheme and for the RAF, you know, going through the commission warrant officer scheme. And at the moment in my life, that's not what I want to be. I like having my big badge because it gives me the freedom to speak. And I'd say most senior officers actually value the honesty. I think there is a sense of this person's been around a little bit longer. They've got experience behind them. Let's hear what they have to say. And that definitely made a difference, I think, when we had the service women's representatives, when we did our meetings with Sarah Rafferton at the time, Secretary of State of Defence, Ben Wallace. He actually was really interested in what we had to say. I think if I had been a flight attendant, I may not have had that opportunity. Having that big badge definitely makes a difference.
The opportunity then to do that truth to power is something that comes with the big badge. How would you encourage others to be brave, to do the truth to power?
Well, in a military organisation, you've got to remember the rank structure. So I think it's really important to remember, as long as you are respectful of rank and respectful of the individual speaking to, I think as long as you're honest, polite and can bring your point across, anybody will listen to you. And it's really, really important. And that's why I say to my juniors, I say to them, if you've got something to say, I want you to come and say it to me. Be authentic, be yourself. Don't script it. Come to me, tell me exactly what's wrong, and I will help you take it forward or change it. You know, I've been to many conferences where, as a warrant officer, I can speak up and say things, and people sometimes in the room sort of go, ooh. But actually, they want me to say it because I'm not in that promotion push, whereas some junior officers are still in a promotion push that, for them, they don't have that opportunity.
Quite often I ask our guests if they have any favourite quotations. Do you have any favourite quotations? And do you have any books or resources that you could recommend for people?
Yeah, I'm currently reading a book called Leading Gracefully by Monique Tallon. It was one that was recommended to me by a friend on social media, actually, who I didn't even know. She just said, oh, you might like this book. It's really, really empowering. It's written when President Obama was president of the United States. And she was talking about being a woman going through the processes there of getting her voice heard. I've also read Positive Vibes by Vex King. I love Women's Hour on BBC. And also Kate Winslet. She's been doing loads of interviews recently about women's appearances and how it doesn't matter how women look, which I think is really, really important as well, because women put so much pressure on how they look these days. And she's saying, you know what, it doesn't matter. People like Helen Mirren, she's great. If you listen to any of her, she did an interview once which was brilliant, and she didn't care. So I think those sort of really strong women, they're making a difference. I love the quotation by Madeleine Albright where she said, there's a special place in hell for women who don't support other women. I think that's really, really important, because I think we are there to pull each other up, you know, help each other, break those glass ceilings together. And by working together, we are so much stronger than working apart. There shouldn't be tension or jealousy or envy between women. We need to push each other, help each other, and bring our best versions of ourselves every day.
It's a bit like love. People think that there's a finite amount of that. And it's the same with helping and supporting others. It doesn't need to be competitive. And in fact, if you collaborate, then of course the outcome is going to be better because there'll be more of you to do it.
Absolutely. And you know, people say your network is your net worth. And I 100% agree with that. Meeting women from all across defence and civil service and the contractors that we work with, listening to people's lived experiences and thinking, how can I make that better for them? Or what can I recommend for you to make your day a bit better? And I think that's really, really important. You know, at first I did wonder what little old me could bring to the table, but hopefully, you know, if one person's heard this and thinks, oh, actually, that's me, then that's my job done.
I hope you felt Sim's drive, passion and purpose as much as we did in the studio. Her achievements and success are well worth reflecting on. Her dedication and motivation to ensure all servicewomen have the best possible experience is a pledge everyone should have. It will accelerate progress and help Defence deliver on its operational effectiveness. Sim's attitude and energy are contagious. I loved her encouragement for us to make a difference by being a positive light to others. Even though Sim has a big badge and feels she has the freedom to speak and be heard, she encourages people to challenge respectfully. What was it that Sim said that spoke to you? We'd love to hear your thoughts at theculturekernel@bfbs.com. Next time, we have something a little bit different. We're sharing some of the conversations we had at BFBS Creative's Leading Storytellers event and reflecting on some of the highlights from this series. Thanks for listening. Take care until next time.